Thank you very much. Just like to thank the Fields Institute and the organizers for setting up this conference. It's a pleasure to be here. This is actually my first time here, so it's a pleasure. I'm going to talk about a topic which is fairly popular these days in terms of research in actuarial science, and that is essentially Gerber shoe type analysis for ruin theoretic types of issues. What I'm going to talk about in particular is a fairly general Gerber shoe type analysis for a more general type of analysis, but also a more general type of model that is usually considered in the literature. This is joint work with Eric Chung, David Landrio, and Jake Young Wu, all of whom are here today. So I'm happy about that, and they can correct my errors when I make mistakes. They can make things right. What I'm going to talk about is specifically the Spahr-Anderson model, which is well known. That for those of you who are not familiar, that's the model where the number of claims process is a renewal process. Spahr-Anderson was probably the first person to study that in an actuarial context. I'm going to talk about what I'm going to call a dependent Spahr-Anderson model, which I'll explain in a minute. And let me just go ahead and start talking about the basic model, because it takes a few minutes to set it up. We're going to study, as is typically the case, we're going to study the surplus process, which we call U sub T. And it's the usual model where U is the initial surplus, C is the premium rate per unit time, and the Y's are the claim amounts. The times between the claims, which we need to specify according to the renewal process formulation, are IID, and we will refer to them as V1, V2, and so on. And a generic one we'll just call V. Their distribution function is capital K. And we're going to assume that it actually has a density, small k. What I mean by a dependent Spahr-Anderson model is essentially to assume that the claim sizes, which we refer to as the Y's, are such that the increments in the random walk structure are independent. And the increments, basically, when you formulate in terms of the random walk structure, are CB, which is basically the inner claim times, minus the Y's. So that's what I mean by a dependent Spahr-Anderson model, in that the typical models assume that the V's and the Y's, in other words, the interclaim times and the claim amounts, are independent. But that's not necessarily the case. There's been some recent work done where they've assumed some sort of dependency structure between those. And it turns out that really doesn't disturb very much in terms of the mathematical analysis. And so the purpose of this talk really is to kind of make some general observations about these models without making specific assumptions as to the distributions of the V's and the Y's in general. Although, if I have time later on in the talk, I might discuss one particular assumption for the Y's. So for the distribution of the Y's, we assume, because we're modeling a joint distribution of the V's and the Y's, it's convenient notationally to specify the joint distribution as the product of the marginal distribution for the V's, the time between claims, and then conditional on the V's to then specify the conditional distribution of the Y's, given that the V was equal to T. So intuitively, the joint distribution for the V's and the Y's, we are assuming some sort of joint model for the amount of a claim and the time leading up to that claim. That's essentially how we formulate the model. And a lot of the analysis is in terms of transforms, and I'll typically put a tilde over the transform so that the transform of the conditional claim size distribution is given here. And as usual, we assume that C is the premium rate per unit time, and we will typically assume that satisfies the positive security loading condition. Okay. Let me just mention briefly the classic Gerber-Shu function that Hans Gerber and Elias Shu did in their paper in 1998. The classical one is fairly general. This is it here, which I'll just review for those of you who are not that familiar. Delta is either a discount factor in a financial context, or as a Laplace transform, it can be viewed as a Laplace transform argument. W12, I'm subscripting with the 1, 2, I'll explain why in a few minutes. W12 is a what they call a penalty function. And what it is it's a function of the surplus immediately prior to ruin, which is UT minus, and then the deficit at ruin, which is necessarily negative, so we call that the absolute value of UT. We use the indicator function to indicate that ruin does occur, T being the time of ruin. And mathematically, it's convenient, as is typically the case here, to model everything as a function of the initial surplus U for mathematical reasons. So that's the basic model. That's the one that Gerber and Hsu introduced in their famous paper in 1998 in connection with the classical Poisson model, and there's been a huge literature since then. But that's far and away the most common choice for the penalty function. Just a little bit of background in terms of the dependency models, which we're going to be discussing here. Specific dependency structures have been used in various contexts. Boudrieu et al. In 2006, Cosette et al. In 2008, Badescu et al. In 2008, and Elbrecher and Boxma, for example, in 2004 have looked at models, all of which assume essentially the same sort of structure mathematically here, because it's important mathematically to retain the random walk structure. So that's one reason why these dependencies, particular dependency structures, have been used. So we're going to generalize this Gerber-Hsu function so that it doesn't include just two variables, it includes four. And I'll just mention what the other two are going to be. And I should mention that a lot of the motivation for this is based on discussions that I had with Manuel Morales, who's going to be talking tomorrow about a similar sort of approach, except he's going to be looking at a Levy process type formulation rather than the Spahr-Anderson formulation. So I should mention that a lot of the motivation for this type of analysis is based on work that he's been doing. So the other two variables that I'm going to include, the third variable is, I'm calling x sub t. That's essentially the minimum value in the surplus before ruin occurs. Ruin, by definition, occurs when the surplus becomes negative. So we're interested in modeling when the third variable, xt, is the minimum surplus before ruin. Okay, so that's the lowest level it reaches. And then the fourth one, which we're going to introduce, is this variable which we call r sub nt minus 1. So essentially, this quantity, r sub nt minus 1, is if ruin occurs on the first claim, we just set it to be u, the initial surplus. Otherwise, it's essentially the surplus level immediately after the second last claim, the one right before ruin. Okay, so those are the other two variables we're going to study. Reasons for including these, aside from the obvious one that you get more insight into the basic model when you do this, and that's true, actually, and I'll mention that later on. It actually does allow you to study the joint distribution of the final pair of the final U and the final V. So in other words, the joint distribution of the last inner claim time and the claim-causing ruin, which fundamentally have different mathematical structures because essentially they're associated with ruin occurring. So they behave differently than the usual ones. So that's part of the motivation for this. And in fact, the other thing that the use of the last minimum, what that allows us to do is to study the distribution of the last ladder height, the last drop in surplus, which again is fundamentally different because it's associated with ruin occurring. Okay, so that's the motivation for the use of these two from a more tangible reason to include these. So we've got a four variable function, and as I said, I'll just mention later on that the order of these is important for notational purposes, so that the 1, 2 here denotes the fact that we're including only the first two, which are the usual two, the surplus and the deficit. Okay, so that's the reason why I had the 1, 2 in the notation there. So what the plan is, what I'm planning on studying is, in this talk, better speed up a bit, I guess, but essentially, I'm interested in the mathematical structure of all these functions in these models because, the same kinds of things seem to happen in all these special cases with the parametric assumptions. So the motivation for this work is really to understand the mathematical structure because there's a very common underlying mathematical structure which I want to talk about. And in particular, one of them, which I'll mention, which is very important for mathematical as well as practical reasons, I suppose, is that G bar delta of U is essentially I like to think of this, this is when the penalty function is identically one. And so this is, I'd like to think of this as the Laplace transform of the time of ruin. But also when delta is zero, it's the ruin probability, which is certainly the most simple, single most important quantity in all these analyses. I'll be talking a bit more about the structure of those in a minute, but essentially the same basic structure holds in this dependency case as it does in all the independent models, which is that we have a compound geometric structure, which is nice mathematically because, I mean, the properties of the compound geometric are well understood. Okay, so first of all, what I want to do is I want to use a probabilistic argument first to get an integral equation, which turns out to be a defective renewal equation. Again, that's a nice structure for analysis. And to do that, it turns out, not just in this analysis, actually, if I have time, I might explain why. I think this analysis is more important if you're interested in analyzing the time of ruin and the surplus, even in the general context, that the approach that we're going to use here is probably fundamentally better than the usual approach because there's a difference in terms of the contributions of all these functions to these quantities if ruin occurs on the first claim. And the reason for that is because essentially there's a linear relationship between the time and the surplus if ruin occurs on the first claim, which means you have to analyze that a bit carefully. What I need to do is I need to introduce a density associated with ruin occurring on the first claim. And so the notation I'm using for this is the joint density of the surplus and the deficit for ruin occurring on the first claim. So I'm calling that H1 star. So X is the surplus variable, the surplus immediately prior to ruin. Y is the deficit, and then we condition on U, the initial surplus. And essentially, the motivation for this is very easy to see. The density is essentially, if the time is T, then essentially the time of the first claim is at T, and then we've reached X at that point, so the claim has to be for not X plus Y to have a deficit of Y. Now, the only thing is, as I said, there's a linear relationship between the time and the surplus if ruin does occur on the first claim, because in that case, X equals U plus CT, because it's just linear, or equivalently, T is X minus U over C. So if you just change variables, this is very intuitive to just write this down from based on a probabilistic argument. So this relationship has to hold in general. And in this case, so we have a joint distribution of the two variables, and if ruin does occur on the first claim, each of the other two variables, the minimum is obviously U, and also this R quantity, which is ruin after the second last claim, which we define to be U if it occurs on the first claim. There's no such linear relationship between the time and the surplus otherwise, so we use the density H2 star to denote the joint distribution of the time of ruin, the surplus, the deficit, and also the fourth argument here, V, refers to the R variable. As we'll see, the third variable we can get from that. We don't actually need to include that in the analysis. So the distribution of all these variables we can get without explicitly specifying that, and I'll explain why that is in a few minutes. So we have basically the joint density of the four of these quantities, actually five, I guess, if you include the time of ruin, can be completely specified in terms of these two densities, which basically correspond to examining whether ruin occurs in the first claim or not. So now we use the same argument as Gerber and Hsu did in their paper. They did many different things. They actually just analyzed the Poisson model, but their analysis is actually rather remarkable because their arguments apply much more generally than just the Poisson model. Anyway, so let me just explain probabilistically why we get an integral equation. I'm going to show a picture in a minute, actually, but because we've got all these variables. But essentially what we do, the Gerber-Hsu function, the general one involving all four variables, we condition on the first drop in surplus. And if that drop in surplus does not cause ruin, then it must be for an amount y. The amount of the drop has to be between 0 and u, because that would not cause ruin. And probabilistically, essentially, we start over at that point, okay? Because these variables can be reset, and we can just start over. So that's one reason why the use of these variables works, actually. And again, their argument, basically, because we can shift the process, we can use the density conditional on 0 rather than u, because we're just looking at the drop below the initial level, and we just adjust the variables accordingly. So this first term here, the V delta at the very end, is actually the one that's a little trickier to analyze. But essentially these two, we just condition on the first drop in surplus, and then we also condition further on whether the first drop occurred on the first claim or not. And it takes us to a new level, U minus Y, if the drop is Y, and we start over probabilistically. But the V delta essentially is the contribution that occurs if ruin does occur on the first drop. Okay, so this is when ruin does occur in the first drop. And the term here, again, I'm going to show a picture in a minute, but essentially the first term here we condition on the amount of the drop exceeding U, so it's equal to Y. Maybe I'll put the picture up in a minute, and then I'll put a picture up, and then I'll put this back on. So if we look at a picture, I guess, hopefully this is, well, this is not a good slide. Sorry, apologies, this is hard to see. Essentially, we start at U, and we go up linearly, if you can follow this, to this point, and the first claim occurs here. So now we're assuming, this picture in particular is for ruin on the first drop in surplus, but that does not occur on the first claim. Okay? So in that case, the first claim takes us to a new level, which is above U, which we call X plus U. So here's the new quantity, R. And the true value of R above zero is the U plus the V. Okay, so when we do that, let me see if I can even put this up here so we can, hopefully we can see this. This is the V term that I was mentioning. The fourth variable is the R, which is the V plus U here. That's where this term comes from. The third variable is the minimum surplus, and that's still equal to U because that only changes when we drop below U. So that remains at U. So I'm looking at this term here. The true surplus is X plus U, which we can see from here, I suppose. These are terrible slides, anyway. The true surplus is X plus U, and the true deficit is Y, which means that in these terms here we have X plus U and Y minus U because we're looking at the drop below zero. Anyway, the other thing I would just mention here, this one's a little bit easier. This is if ruin does occur in the first claim, which is why we have this density here. So the true surplus is X plus U, and the true deficit is Y minus U. And that would actually correspond, I suppose, to, if you just ignore these lines, if the line went directly to here, you could see that both variables were equal to U. So if you ignored that, in that sense, we could look at both of these. So anyway, I apologize. These slides are terrible. Anyway. Okay, so that's the... So that's basically a probabilistic argument which leads to an integral equation, just to kind of summarize these, leads to an integral equation for these for this Gerber-Shue function. And then I'll just mention that in order to analyze further, we can derive what's typically called in this kind of analysis, the discounted density in terms of the variable delta. We can use the discounted density by integrating over the appropriate variables, but we have to be careful because ruin could occur on the first claim, in which case the time is basically X minus U over C. So this is the marginal distribution, and if we do that, we can rewrite the part of the term involving the convolution with M in the integral equation in this way. If you think about it, the classical Gerber-Shue analysis, if you think of this, by conditioning on the variable U, it's basically the expectation of this discounted density. That's what it happens to be in that case. So for mathematical reasons, if we define this quantity phi delta to be the double integral of these, and then f delta times phi delta to be the integral over x of this discounted density of the surplus, what that means is that you could put this in defective renewal equation form. Phi delta is less than 1, f delta is in fact a density, and so we do have a defective renewal equation. So quite generally, in other words, to summarize, even for this fairly general Gerber-Shue function in this general model, we still have a defective renewal equation, which is well understood and studied in this type of analysis. And the other thing I'll mention, just to remind you, because of this approach, we can actually get the joint distribution of all these variables from the joint distribution of the surplus, the deficit, and this ruin after the second last claim. And in particular, the distribution, including the minimum, is also specified in terms of these. Okay, so that's an important structural point. Okay, so now, where are we? Anyway, I'm getting disorganized here. So in terms of the analysis now, let me just mention there are simplifications that occur, which I'll just briefly specify. The first is that if we drop off the third variable or the fourth variable, the R, then the analysis is quite a bit simpler, because this Gerber-Schuh function, the integral equation, only depends on the discounted density, which is a little bit easier. And in particular, we don't need to worry, if we're just interested in analyzing these, we don't need to worry about whether ruin occurred on the first claim or not. Okay, so that's a little bit simpler. It only involves the discounted density. Furthermore, if we actually drop off the surplus variable, the x, the first variable, and the 2, 3 refers to the inclusion of the deficit and the last minimum, in that case, it's even simpler because it only depends on the ladder height. Okay, so that's even simpler. And in particular, the usual analysis involving the deficit, which certainly for risk management purposes, the deficit is far and away the most important variable of all these. And in that case, the analysis is particularly simple. This is exactly the same structure as in the dependent case involving the ladder height only. But the interesting thing is, in this more general formulation, that we still get a nice structure if we include the last minimum. And so in particular, the distribution of the last ladder height, the last drop in surplus, is relatively straightforward mathematically, which is nice. And as always, if W is 1, this equation simplifies to this form, and we know that the solution of this particular defective renewal equation is the compound geometric tail. So in other words, even in this fairly dependent structure, I mean, all these analyses were done in the special cases, they always identified the Laplace transform at the time of ruin as a compound geometric tail. Well, here's why. It has to be, from probabilistic reasoning. Okay, so that's always going to be the case. That's true in the independent case, but it's also true in the dependent case. And as usual, if you just put delta equals 0, the same is true of the ruin probabilities. Okay, so now let me just briefly talk about the identification of the distributions that we're interested in. The first thing I'll mention is, as I said, the mathematical properties associated with defective renewal equations are quite well understood. And I mean, they're used in many different contexts. There's a couple of different ways we can write the solution. We choose, it's actually convenient for what we're doing, to write the solution in terms of a compound geometric density, which is essentially the derivative of this Laplace transform. That's a compound geometric density. And in that case, it's well known, for example, in many books, in Resnick, for example. Here's the general form of the solution in terms of that function v, which v was the term outside in the defective renewal equation. Alternatively, it's sometimes convenient to use a different form if v is differentiable and to write the solution in terms of the compound geometric tail itself. So you can do it either way. For example, for the last ladder height, it's particularly simple, which is basically the surplus plus the deficit. The solution is very simple using the second formulation, although in general we're going to look at the first solution, this one, rather than this one. But it's certainly for the Laplace ladder height, it's quite easy to analyze. Okay, I should mention briefly, you need to use different arguments if you're actually interested in identifying basically the ladder heights, the discounted densities, the phi delta. These quantities basically are not identifiable using what we're doing here. We're just looking at the structure at this point. Okay, so I will have a little bit more to say about that later on, but right now we're just looking at the structure. And what I'm going to do now is I want to first express the joint discounted distribution of the four of these. And as I said, discounted essentially means that we've got the time variable is the fifth, actually. But we can express them all in terms of the discounted densities of ruin occurring on the first claim and the second claim, and so we subscript these with deltas. And we do that, I mean, the approach is very straightforward. Essentially, we choose the penalty function so that essentially we work with the Laplace transform, and then we basically invert it analytically. Okay, so what we get when we do that, if we choose this particular penalty function, first we drop off the variable 3 for the moment. I'll put that in a moment, which is the last minimum. So we look at the surplus, the deficit, and the R variable, the ruin after the second last claim. So there's the trivariate transform with the arguments S1, S2, S4. And if you do that and just rewrite this, then we basically lined up the terms involving the exponential one, so we're going to pick up the coefficients of that, essentially. More generally, if we then include the third variable, we do this in a particular order just because it's more convenient. If we do then include the third variable, we see that the general, if we include the third variable as well, we can write the overall term V delta as e to the minus S3 times the V delta 1, 2, 4, which excludes the third. And essentially all we do, here's the, well, I was going to say the quadrivariate. I guess it's actually five variables if you include delta as the argument. The others are S1 for the surplus, S2 for the deficit, S3 for the last minimum, or the minimum before ruin, and S4 for the R variable. Then if we just plug the solution in this form into the general solution, Resnick's general solution for the defective renewal equation, the analysis becomes really easy because all you do, look at the general solution and line up the coefficients. So in each case, we've got four different integral forms corresponding to four different densities on the subspace. Sorry. Whoa, that's way down here. Sorry. I better just use the bottom of it. So here it is. Here. It looks very messy, but the point is that we've basically written this Laplace transform in a way that we can just pick off the coefficients. We've got, there's four components. And again, the Laplace transform is unique. And as I said, we get a very different contribution from Ruin occurring on the first plane. So we actually get, for these four variables, the density is on subspaces of R4. And it's, again, it's very intuitive to get these. But the first one we get is the density in terms of the joint distribution of the discounted density. And this is basically, H1 corresponds to Ruin on the first plane. And as we can see in that case, the third and fourth variables are each equal to U. So we get a density on the subspace R2 in that case. The second one we get, which corresponds to Ruin on the first drop in surplus due to Ruin, but not on the first plane. So in that case, the third variable remains at U, but the fourth variable changes. So we get a density in that case. And we can write that in terms of the discounted density multiplied by these quantities here. And I should mention that you can interpret these, you can actually do this probabilistically as well. But we're doing it analytically at this point. So you can reason these out probabilistically as well. The third component corresponds to a drop in surplus which does not cause ruin, followed by ruin on the next plane after the drop. And again, it's a bit strange, but you get this fundamental difference. And then finally, the fourth term corresponds to the case where you have a drop which does not cause ruin, and then ruin does not occur on the next plane, it occurs thereafter. So in other words, the density of the four of these you can get from the three, excluding the last minimum. We can do the same thing for the, if you're not interested in the fourth variable, as I said, it's quite a bit easier. Just if you drop off the R variable and just look at the, if you just look at the first three variables, the surplus, the deficit, and the minimum before ruin, essentially the same argument you use. You can just line up the coefficients in the transform and pick off the coefficients. And in that case, we get the distribution specified in terms of the discounted density of the surplus, the deficit. So the H1 corresponds to a ruin on the first drop in surplus, and H2 for ruin, but not on the first drop. And I should mention, it's kind of interesting, for the last ladder height, which is the final drop, the Laplace transform is very simple in this case, because the defective renewal equation is simple, and we can immediately pick off the density here for the discounted density of the last drop. So if you just wanted the marginal density, you just put delta equals zero, in which case these would become ruin probabilities. And I should mention, it's kind of interesting that in that case, it turns out that when delta is zero in the classical compound Poisson model, the distribution of the last drop is the same as that of the defective density of the surplus before ruin. I'm not quite sure why that is, but it is. I mean, that is true. It's the same distribution. I don't know probabilistically why that's the case. But the last thing I'll mention is that the proper survival function, the proper distribution function of the final drop, is very simple. And in fact, what we find in that case is that this distribution of the final drop, or this random variable, is stochastically larger than all the other drops, which is much like the claim causing ruin. That's very intuitive. The final drop is different, and it's larger because it basically causes ruin. So the same thing is true for the drop as it was true for the claim causing ruin. Okay, so that's we can actually show that. Just a few other sort of technical issues associated with these defective renewal equations and the structure that's often used to analyze them. One of the nice properties of the defective renewal equations is the asymptotic properties of the solution. I mean, they're very well known and understood. And in particular, the classic Lundberg analysis assumes that the existence of an exponential quantity, which I'm calling kappa here, which is usually, for mathematical reasons, is defined in terms of the Laplace transform of the moment generating function of the ladder height. So in particular, if kappa delta satisfies this quantity, then it's well known that the compound geometric tail has a particular solution asymptotically. That's standard defective renewal equation analysis. And also there's a classic Lundberg upper bound, which also holds. So these are all well known when delta is zero, and now also when delta is not zero. Well, typically it's more convenient to express these quantities in terms of the distribution of the claim sizes and the inner claim times rather than these ladder heights, because we don't know what they are in general. Most analyses basically assume something about those distributions first. So I'd like to just talk about how we can relate them. And just again, mathematically, it's fairly simple. If the claim size distribution, basically, if the moment generating function exists with this choice kappa delta for fixed t, then by dominated convergence, we basically get a different limit on the convolution. The reason this is useful is because we can then essentially say the same thing about, well, we can then condition on the time and the amount of the first claim in order to relate these quantities, right? Because we don't know in general. We haven't related them in general to the time and the amount of the claims. But in that case, just passing the limits through, I mean, this is sort of standard. These quantities, C delta cancels out. I mean, we can do this essentially by just passing these through and using dominated convergence. And what that means is that the solution for kappa delta, which is well known and understood, it's basically a negative solution of what's called the Lundberg equation. And we can see directly that this, using this argument, this directly relates to this formulation or this definition of kappa delta, which is a much more convenient one, to the original one in terms of the ladder height. Okay, and that's just a simple dominated convergence argument. So that's kind of useful. And this equation in particular, the Lundberg's fundamental equation, is very important. I want to talk about that for a moment as well. But essentially, the kappa delta is essentially a negative solution of the Lundberg equation. And that Lundberg's equation appears repeatedly in all these models, and I'm basically going to try and explain why that's true, both in the dependent case, but also in the independent case. The definition is, again, this is very hard to see. I'm sorry. I apologize for that. But anyway, it's the expected value e to the minus delta y minus delta minus CSB equals 1. That's the Lundberg equation. So as I said, S equals minus kappa delta is a root of the Lundberg's fundamental equation if it exists. Well, the reason why it always appears in these analyses, let me just explain why. First of all, if you have a function which we're often interested in, and this appears repeatedly, k is the distribution function of the inner claim times, e to the minus delta t is a discount factor. This is a function omega sub t. If we have this function, then just skipping all the details, the transform relationship is as follows for this function eta. Eta of s is, in terms of transforms, we can write in terms of this quantity here. So there's a nice structure for the Laplace transform, which you can use repeatedly. And now to continue. So what I want to do now, I'm more interested in talking about this in connection with the distribution of the k and the v. In other words, the time and the amount of the claims rather than the ladder height structure. So what you do, it turns out, in that case, we cannot directly include the third variable very easily into the analysis if we condition on the time and the amount of the first claim. But it's not a big deal because we know the general structure. We can put it back in later. So let's just for the moment drop the third variable out, and then we can directly write down the usual equation for conditioning on the time and the amount of the claim is to basically look at it in this way. So beta delta corresponds to ruin occurring on the first claim, and the sigma delta, basically, this corresponds to ruin not occurring and starting over. So this is the usual argument. This is, apart from notational issues, this is the classic argument that's used in all these cases. So this is the approach that's typically done in order to identify the Gerber-Shu function in parametric situations. In other words, for parametric when you're using parametric assumptions for the time and the amount of the claims. So that's the general structure, and as we can see, this quantity here, this integral, is in fact of this form. So we can immediately write down the form of the solution for the Gerber-Shu function. So when we do that, again, it's a fair bit of math, but just bear with me. I'll just explain the details. This is the transform of the Gerber-Shu function, or when we take the transform, we can write it in this way. Sigma delta is well understood. It's equal to these quantities. Skipping all the details, essentially what we can do is we can see that we get, whenever we do this analysis, just a simple little change of variables, we always get a factor multiplied by the Gerber-Shu function, which corresponds to essentially the generalized Lundberg equation being zero. So we always get that as a factor. That always happens in all these arguments. And so it's not a coincidence that happens in all these special cases. So we always get this as a factor times for the defective renewal equation. And then there's some terms here which we will look at in a minute. But in general, it always appears in all these models. Okay, so in particular, the solution involves identifying roots of these Lundberg's equation, sticking them in, and performing the analysis that way. But we can see that this must always happen. Okay? Furthermore, we can say quite a bit more in connection with the relationships between these if we actually look at the special case when W is 1, because that corresponds to the Laplace transform of the time of ruin, which we know must satisfy a compound geometric tail. So we'll get even more information if we put W equals 1, because we get further simplification in that case in terms of the beta delta function. We know the exact form of the transform. We can substitute in here and get this. And so, in fact, what we get, if we look at the transform of the transform, I guess, the double transform, the transform of the compound geometric tail, we already have this factor here which corresponds to the Lundberg equation. And now we have another term here which corresponds to something very similar to that. So it's very, the analysis is very interesting. You get the same kind of structure appearing everywhere. This quantity here, I'm not going to say too much about it, except to say that this typically involves unknown constants, which you have to identify by using roots of the Lundberg equation. So that's typically what happens. Okay, so everything else, we know the structure of everything else. It's a very nice structure here, mathematically. So just continuing on here, when you do this, and again, I don't know what happened, man. I really apologize for these slides here, but essentially what we have, using this analysis, we've identified the transform of this compound geometric tail as 1 minus a quantity in terms of known functions, except possibly for this quantity here, this one in the numerator on the top. Everything else is in terms of transforms of the claim size or the interclaim time. But now if we actually go back and look, we know it satisfies its compound geometric tail. So if we use that, do the same analysis, take transforms there, we get the same thing. So these two quantities must be equal. We've used different probabilistic arguments or analytic arguments to get to, but they must be equal. So when you equate the two, you get a very nice relationship in terms of these quantities for the Laplace transform of the compound geometric random variable. And also, not only that, but you also get a nice form for the solution of the general compound, or the Laplace transform of the Gerber-Shu function in terms of these. So in other words, the message from this is that these things are not a coincidence. The fact that Lundberg's equation appears is not a coincidence, and in fact these quantities are all identifiable. Okay, so these underlying things which seem to appear in all these models are not a coincidence. Just some brief comments about the case without the usual case where we don't have dependency, because life's much simpler there, actually. And the reason for that is because we know even more about the structure. And this is the observation that Gerber and Chu made in their paper in 98, which they did it for the Poisson model, but it's true for all these. And that is that, essentially, if you condition on, if the independence case basically assume that there's no relationship between the claim amounts and claim sizes, which is the usual assumption, in that case, Gerber and Chu essentially mentioned, they noticed that the conditional density of the surplus, or of the deficit given the surplus, is very simple. And in our case, the same thing is true if we even include the time variable and these other variables. It's very simple. It's just, the conditional distribution is just, in terms of the density, P of X plus Y divided by P bar X, which is very intuitive. You have a drop from X to Y, so the claim amount must be X plus Y, given that it exceeds X. In other words, given that it exceeds ruin. That's their observation. It's true here as well. So all these structures are very simple in these cases. Okay, so we know more about the structure of these densities in the independent case because of that fact. And in particular, for example, for the discounted density of the surplus and the deficit is a very simple function of y, the deficit variable. And so in that case, we can simplify further. The other thing that's very important in terms of analysis of these quantities is that in particular, the ladder height can then be interpreted as a mixture random variable, where effectively, if you think about this, this quantity here is the conditional density of the, this is basically like the if you've got a deductible of amount X, this is the distribution on the claim size. It's essentially a mixture over the deductible variable, if you think of it that way. So in other words, we have a very nice mathematical structure. So we know the form of the solution in many cases. And in particular, if claims are exponential, this has also got to be the same exponential. So again, we can say a lot more in the dependence case. Okay. Just to illustrate, how much do I have any time, or am I done? Am I? Well, can I just take maybe a minute? Is that okay? I'll just very quickly. I'll skip all the details except to say that when claims are exponential, we can actually get a nice form for all these functions because the exponential is very nice. Let me just explain in words how we do it. In the case with the exponential claims, if we condition on the first drop in surplus, we essentially can get the form of the solution of the Gerber-Shu function if we've got five variables for the transform. So if we can do that. Then if we stick in that form of the solution, if we then condition on the time and the amount of the first claim, put that quantity back in, we can identify an unknown constant which appears. When I said we have the form of the solution, we have an unknown constant here, which I've called gamma delta. So again, I'm just about out of time, let me just skip the details. But essentially, we get the form of the solution very easily, put that back in, and identify that constant. When we condition on the time and the amount of the first claim, we essentially get a linear equation for that constant that we need to identify. So we get that. Skipping all the details, here's the form of the transform, the five-variable transform in the exponential case, if you want. So it's very, very easy, very simple structure for the transform. It seems to be difficult to invert analytically. But let me just mention, there's one particular case that's quite interesting, and that is if we look at the distribution of the last inner claim time, which turns out to be, I didn't have time to talk about this, but the distribution of the last inner claim time, as I said, should be fundamentally different because it's basically the one right before the claim causing ruin. And it turns out to be an Escher transform. The density turns out to be an Escher transform applied to the usual inner claim time distribution, which is kind of interesting. And in particular, one thing you can show is that this last inner claim time is stochastically smaller than all the other inner claim times, which again is intuitive. Essentially, it should be smaller if it's going to cause ruin because essentially we don't have as much time to build up surplus. Okay, so this agrees with our intuition as well. And in fact, not only that, in the exponential case, it's an Escher transform. So anyway, sorry about that. And I apologize for the quality of these slides. They're really bad. I'm sorry about that. Thanks.